welcome to this week's episode of the Imaginary Music Podcast, a podcast where I'm listening to the theme tune and I forget what the intro is. My name's David. Welcome to this week's episode.
You got there. I was drinking tea as well, so I was expecting you to give me at least 5 more seconds to do that. My name's Sam.
God, I love how good we are at this, Sam.
We're nearly 300 episodes in and we are slick as gravel is what we are.
We're loose like gravel.
We're having fun. We enjoy. Listen, this podcast is almost statistically for us only. So I don't feel any guilt about subjecting our audience to already 1 minute of absolute nonsense. So congratulations. If you made it here, well done you. You're with us. We're together. We can do it.
So this week, we delve back into, we've done this before. I don't want to do a bit of a preamble before we announce what the movie is, because no one's heard of it. So it's not because we're teasing.
As again, 300 episodes in nearly, they have read the title of the podcast and almost certainly decided to play it based on that.
Sam, do you have to so relentlessly live in the real world?
Yes.
So this is another, like, we've done a couple like this. Lost episode, perhaps, Cop and a Half, and I'm sure you've got a list of examples as well, of a movie that's a childhood classic. Now, I had a bit of a... I watched 10 minutes of this on VHS. An actual VHS.
VH what now?
Exactly, which I'll get into in a second.
Yeah, go on.
But this is a childhood classic movie that was only a classic because we had it on VHS.
Had it on VHS.
Is a thing anyone under... 25, like, you have no idea. What do you mean?
Yeah. I mean, number one,
I don't think DVDs ever had the same, like...
I think...
It overlapped too much with streaming and with, like, Sky.
It's about cost. It's about cost because VHS tapes were expensive. And I think DVD, because we're starting to maybe hit the end of that life cycle, DVDs... They started out quite expensive, but really they became a lot more commoditized. There were second-hand shops you could go pick up, like CEX, you could pick up a film for
as with VHS,
£1.
It was the players that were expensive for DVDs, the DVDs themselves.
So expensive that
the first Fast and the Furious movie is centered around people stealing DVD players. If you can imagine today, have them, so, take them, please.
But VHS, I think, especially, they had a real monopoly on it, and they kept those prices high, I think, to be able, in order to keep, you know, to try and hold on to the idea that we're going to have, people are still going to go to the cinema, right? And I think, as we, you know, both come from parents with not masses amount.
How dare you? I'm not poor. You're poor.
We only had a certain amount of tapes. Listen to me, sonny, with your Netflix and unlimited choice. Like, we only had a certain amount of tapes. So if you had it it was played over and over again.
We were in Cyprus at the time, and because of the way that the licensing inspectors
Illegal army piracy. Is that right?
Literally, Sam. My mum was telling me. They literally... Right, so I specifically remember, like, a welcome to VHS cast. Specifically remember we had a videotape of Turner and Hooch, the Tom Hanks and the dog film.
It's a perfect. We had it because we watched it on VHS movie. It's
a
this
million
perfect.
Times terrible movie, and it was like in a box with like a printed jacket with the artwork on it, but it being printed on like a home printer from. Like the early 90s.
Oh my God. Yep.
It was horrible. But they used to sell them. The shop on base was called the Naffy. That is the actual name. I don't have the spelling for you. But it's called the Naffy is the actual shop on an army base. And they used to sell these videos in the actual official army base shop. These pirate videos. And they were so bad, Sam. You could like see people's heads. They would sit in the cinema with a camcorder. The people who produced these. And because it was on an army base, no one was coming in to be like, are you selling illegal videos in here?
Yeah. Yeah, because you're too busy, you know, bombing whatever they're doing in the... So NAFI is an organization. I don't know what it stands for. But you can go see the National Army and Air Forces Institute, and they provide home comforts to the British Armed Forces community stationed overseas. So there we go. That's where it comes from.
It's like the supermarkets that you get on basically, army camps.
It's the Asda of...
They used to sell these pirate videotapes.
Yeah, go on.
We're going to get into my specific experience watching this VHS. I think we should get this. So the movie...
Which you know already, listener, so this isn't a surprise to anyone at all.
The movie is 1989's Who's Harry Crumb? That's right. What? Yeah, I'm with you. I get you. No one's heard of this. No one's watched this. The only person in the entire world who likes this. There's two people. Me and my friend Johnny are the only people in this entire planet who have watched this movie and enjoyed it, like, from times past.
Yeah, because you probably shared the video. So, before we get into the movie, and, oh, of course, listener, there's loads to talk about. Other examples of these types of movies that are almost absolutely shit, like in no way could you argue.
And I would say also movies no one's heard of, like that's an important part of this, is like movies none of your friends believe exist
but that hold a iron grip on your nostalgia. So you've got this one, you've already mentioned Turner and Hooch, which is it's a perfect example.
I don't really even like that movie.
It's terrible. I've tried to watch it with the kids. It is pure shite. The other one for me is Masters of the Universe with Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, we're talking about great movies that revolutionized the
cartoon
to live action
genre. Oh my God. I have so vivid memories of the little gremlin thing, the little
fucking chicken.
It's really quite disturbingly,
it's visceral, isn't it?
Pressed into my brain in a way that I think that like there's no way of doing that other than through repeated unrelenting rewatches. As a child, that's the only way you're going to get that level of impression. Muppets Treasure Island, now I think great movie. You though, and that's a previous episode, and I think in that episode we talk about how this film kind of passed you by. It wasn't
the
one
Muppets,
you had on VHS.
The Muppets as a franchise passed me by. I loved Muppets Treasure Island. I thought that was a great movie. Hated A Christmas Carol, but loved Treasure Island.
Yes.
And like, but I don't really get the Muppets. No, I get it, but like, it's just not a property I'm familiar with, which is bizarre. But
because it just didn't happen to be in the Naffy. It didn't have to be in that dodgy shop that you
got it from. British Armed Forces sanctioned convenience shop. Yeah.
There's also I think maybe the last one for me, and this is another previous episode. You can go back and listen to our thoughts on is. Joel Schumacher Batman and Robin with Mr. Freeze, like that's one of those movies that we just had on and was probably as well slightly in like maybe towards the older end, because that's a sexual movie, that is a very very sexual movie with Uma Thurman and everything, like so there's loads of stuff where you think, why was I, what parents, what are we doing? And I think a lot of that probably falls on my dad, who introduced me to many, many great movies, but many films that were definitely not appropriate in a good way, in a good way. So that brings us back to Who's Harry Crumb, a film I have never seen before. I had never even heard of it, but for you, a treasured childhood classic. So tell
us
why.
Not exaggerating to say that I have seen this movie dozens of times. I've even seen it sort of, I say recently, like the last maybe 5 or 6 years. And it is just one of those treasured childhood movies that I'd forgotten large chunks of because it's so inconsequential.
Where does it sit then on your like ranking of forgot? Is it the quintessential one, or are there more kind of impactful movies? Because I think...
I don't know. I mean...
These aren't created equally though, are they? Yeah, because like Star Wars, obviously... is one of the films we watched, but that's a whole different thing. Is this the crappiest one, or do you think it sits in the middle?
I don't know. I feel like this is just one of those. It's difficult when put on the spot to name all of your like childhood nostalgia movies. But if it came in front of me, I'd be like, oh my God, I love that movie. And then I'd watch it and be like, which we've done dozens of times on the podcast. Oh, yeah. Oh, that wasn't good. Of movies. I would say I don't think this is one of my favourite John Candy movies by, you know, this. It's maybe like the seventh. My seventh favourite John Candy movie, because he's done so many other good movies that aren't this. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of... But it occupies that space where I've seen it so much, and it is this... We're going to talk about all of the various flaws of this movie, if you can marshal your brain to remember even a bit of it, Sam. but it's fun. It is a fun movie. And I found myself like smiling and laughing at it, you know, just in spite of myself last night when we were watching it. You know, it's just like a happy, safe space. All of the problematic things aside, and again, we'll get into that. You know, fairly disposable. It's kind of like a, you know, Blank Check that we watched. That was another like movie from my childhood that we watched quite a lot. And you know, revisiting that, it's like, why did I like this? What is here for me to have liked? The Mighty Ducks, it's all coming to me now, is another movie we watched ad infinitum. Again, not a good movie. Why did I like this movie? You know,
terrible.
And this is maybe previous got episode. the least for children, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Of all,
yeah,
of
this
those
is this is a bizarre. Let's get into this movie, but before we do, and we'll come back to John Candy. But we've done Uncle Buck, we've done Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. We've done Home Alone.
We've done Stripes.
We've done Stripes. I think that might be all of our John Candy. But you know, someone who I think I probably at the time, in the 90s, 2000s, like I didn't particularly realize that I didn't realize the impact that he had obviously made on our childhood watching, because he's in so many films and a lot of it's small roles, and so much of that is because obviously he died so young. And
30 years this month when this episode comes out.
We've talked before about how we were robbed of the Robin Williams.
Him too.
Yeah, the Robin Williams transition from funny comedy actor to Good Will Hunting, and like the seriousness.
Yeah, we never got John Candy's Good Will Hunting.
We never got that. We never got the Dead Poets Society. We never got those. To a lesser extent, Jack. Ever since Jack, that's a fucking weird film. Like we didn't get the seriousness brought still with the fun and the lightness that great comedy actors can bring. And I do feel so robbed of that. I do feel like we have lost something there, because John Candy is so magnetic, and even in this egregiously broad, aggressively broad comedy, like he's still bringing a warmth, and he's still bringing like an everyman soul to this otherwise pretty vapid movie. I've got to say
absolutely. So the basic plot is that Harry Quinn is a private detective.
I've watched it less than 12 hours ago.
Who's Harry Crumb? He's a private detective who is brought in to investigate the kidnapping of a billionaire's daughter.
Hand up, question. So he's a private detective and he works for Crumb and Crumb, but he's like the last alive descendant of these Crumbs who were really good at this, and he's like the...
To get really nerdy for a second,
the black sheep.
The idea is that Crumb and Crumb is like the Pinkerton agency. They're like
a
private detective agency that have existed. They used to work for J.D. Rockefeller. They've existed for generations, and they've always been headed by someone who looks exactly like John Candy. The Crumb, who is like the, you know, brilliant and incisive and go-getting and clever, all of these things. And then you have Harry Crumb. And the joke of the movie, I actually really like the title, is who's Harry Crumb? Because everyone's asking themselves, because he acts, the whole John Candy performance in this movie is, I'm not going to say nuanced, however, it is layered in that John Candy's performance and the Harry Crumb as the character is a character who believes he is Philip Marlowe, right? He believes he is, like, you know, Jake from Chinatown. He believes he is that, like, golden age private detective.
Yeah.
He's clever. He's, you know, renowned. He believes all of this. He goes through this movie acting like this amazingly, like Poirot or like Sherlock Holmes, whatever, acting like that. However, you know, he's a 6'2", you know, 300-pound buffoon who, like, is terrible at his job. That's the whole thing. And yet somehow kind of muddles through being well-meaning and solves the crime. Mostly in spite of himself. But that's where the humour comes from, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is a kind of slapsticky, fairly, like, we're not plumbing the depths here. And I think...
Here's a question for you while we're here.
Yeah.
Who is this for? Like, I don't think science has come.
This is not
for kids. It is unbelievable in today's day and age. This is unbelievably sexual. This is a very sexual movie, right? From the get go, I swear to God, the first 5 minutes of this movie was worn out on my VHS tape.
because we see a woman getting like a mud bath treatment or something, isn't it?
And we see forefront. We see boobs in this, actual boobs in the very, like, almost the first frame of this movie.
It's 1996, and Dave's interested in that now.
It's 1989.
No, but I'm saying you would be interested in 1989, or maybe 96 is even still a bit early. Maybe 2000.
I'm interested now. How about that? that's safe.
Okay. That works.
But, like, it's really raunchy. It's not for kids. I also think the... again, it's really broad, and I'm not trying to say that John Candy's turning in like an incredibly, like, complex performance full of pathos. This is not Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's John Candy playing the clown, and it's good. But I do think it's also maybe a bit complex, even if you were 10. You know, I think you miss some of the nuances of this plot. You know, especially with his boss and the stepmother and things like that. I think there's a lot of spinning wheels in this. I'm not saying it goes anywhere or anything like that, but it's just a little bit too, it's too raunchy and too complex to be for kids. While at the same time, it's not clever enough or violent enough to be for adults.
Yeah. So you're sat watching it. You're sat watching it, really. And I just want to say, I really enjoyed this. Like, I sat and had a great time. I was John Candy silly, and we get some funny, you know, there's a bit of nudity in it, and I'm like, oh, it's fine. I'm like, oh, I'm having a great time. But it has left absolutely no impact on me whatsoever. I barely could tell you what happens to what, and I watched it all. And I think that's because, Dave, you've nailed it. Who is it for? And what do we want the audience to feel as we go through this? Other than, like, just a bit of light laughter, they don't really seem to have figured that out. And I think if you look at maybe, and this came out a year before, Leslie Nielsen, Naked Gun, a year before, and I think there's a movie that has nailed the tone. And it's also pretty much said, this is a movie for adults, and we are going to lean in on that, but we're not going to go too far, but we're going to have some, you know, we're going to have some dick jokes, we're going to have a bit of
condom scene,
the condom, but it's going to be pushed to the limit. It's going to be more Saturday Night Live than it is Turner and Hooch, and this sits in that weird, like, the Hooch zone where should I put this on a Sunday afternoon? And the answer is absolutely not. But we sit down and watch it in the evening? And I don't know the answer to these questions. I don't think any of them are appropriate.
The Naked Gun.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's a silly movie. It's a spoof that exists in a universe that's silly, right? And the whole movie. So all the characters in that movie kind of, like, exist in this ridiculous, like, universe where you know, you've got Leslie Nielsen acting this acting a straight man, but within this crazy bonkers universe. In this movie, it's all quite serious, apart from Harry Crumb. Harry Crumb's like obvious mental condition here, where he thinks he's, you know, he thinks he's Sherlock Holmes.
It does feel like that. It does feel like he's
no, like his psychosis in this movie, where he thinks he's Sherlock Holmes, and everyone else being like fairly grounded and like fairly true to form, and
and
I like the performances, but it's and so it's not. It doesn't give the opportunity to lean into the like the spoofy nature of it as much as The Naked Gun, for instance. So you kind of like walking this middle line where it's all very silly, but it can't quite go as far as it wants to go, maybe.
But I, not that I can sit and tell you the plot of The Naked Gun right now, but it kind of doesn't matter.
Is the Queen going to be assassinated?
The Queen's assassinated.
Simpson's in the hospital. We've done that. Is that a previous episode?
I think we've done Nicky and we. And I think, like, but basically, the good guy is going to stop the bad guys from doing something bad. And, like, there isn't the same analogue for this movie. There isn't the same basic plot. We've got multiple different you know, actors in terms of the story, trying to achieve different things. We've got the dad of who seemingly only gives a shit about one daughter. We've got the daughter who's trying to like carve out some kind of role for her in this family by saving her daughter, by saving her sister. We've got the what's his face, the guy, the sex offender.
I think he's called Dreyfus.
Elliot Drazen, played by Jeffrey Jones, who is like a literal fucking sex offender. What the fuck, man? Anyway, like, we've got him and his kind of attempts to get... Is he trying to get money from the dad of the...
So,
but then we've also got...
Reason,
Hold on. We've still got Annie Potts and Vince, like, hanging around trying to get money as well. So
I love Annie Potts in this movie.
Oh,
she's a caricature, and it's brilliant.
She's so funny. But I think what I'm getting to is that like there's way too much going on for a Sunday afternoon viewing with the kids. But oddly, but there's also nowhere near enough going on for me to actually sit and watch this as a like a. I'm going to sit and engage with the story. Like, we are just floating around, and then it's okay because John Candy's here to do something funny, and it's okay because John Candy's here in Indian face. What? Oh God! We can talk about that in a second. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't really matter.
I absolutely agree. It's kind of like, and because they don't really establish good stakes, and they don't really manage conflict well in this movie. Where on paper the script of we watched a film, and I cannot remember the name of it. It was really good, with Danny DeVito and
yes,
and Judge Reinhold and his wife kidnap Danny DeVito's wife to extort money from Danny DeVito. Danny DeVito basically decides that actually he'd quite like it if his wife was murdered. So he simultaneously tries to convince the police that he's going to pay a ransom while trying to get the kidnappers to murder his wife.
Yeah.
Really good movie.
Ruthless People.
With this?
1986. Ruthless People. Previous episode.
Yeah, great film.
Fantastic.
But
fantastic.
A lot in common with this, because this in this movie, you've got Harry Crumb trying to solve this crime. He's a moron, basically, and that's the whole thing. So you've got him doing that. You've got Drayson, the boss, who...
Played by Jeffrey Jones,
who's kidnapped this girl to get a ransom, which develops later in the movie into he's doing it all because he's an incel and he's in love with this woman that he met in college, and she loves money.
Annie Potts. But Annie Potts won't go out with him because he's not rich enough.
He's running this like nationwide.
I know. Like,
this is the one thing I'm like, surely he's got loads of money. Surely he's got tons of money. He also has a pterodactyl egg. There are only two in the existence in the entire world. And he's got one in his office on his desk.
So yeah, this sums up why, as much as I like my intellectual brain says, this is fucking trash, and like just having the amount of time they spend talking about this pterodactyl egg, the amount of scenes we have with the egg, and Harry comes like juggling with it, and there's only two of them in the world, and then the egg becomes, you know, the end. It's like the egg, and I'm just thinking,
Chekhov's
like,
eggs.
Chekhov's egg. It is. It kind of gets away with it. It kind of gets away with it. And there's so many small jokes, and a lot of it, I think, probably, you know,
a lot of the comedy in this really, really works. But what I was getting at there was that you've then, so on top of that, on top of those characters doing their own things to achieve their aims, Harry Crumb's trying to solve this crime that he's not equipped to solve. He never suspects his boss. His boss is trying to, it's like $10 million. It's a lot of money. Annie Potts and her tennis coach have been planning to kill the father so that she can inherit all of his money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her husband, so they can inherit his money. So she's trying to fuck with the kidnapping because she doesn't want him to pay the ransom because there won't be enough money left for her to have once she kills him. And I do think that plot line comes together quite well at the airport at the end. It's the one thing in this movie I think like is competently like scripted. But there's a lot of spinning plates, and it doesn't leave a lot for Shawnee Smith, who plays Nikki, the younger sister, to do. That's how you could make this a kids movie, is if she's the lead character, you know, in an Inspector Gadget kind of way. Like if she's the clever one who's actually solving the crime.
Yeah. 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 And the problem is that, and I think this is the overriding theme for me, is that we just leave so much on the table. You're talking about Nikki, the unloved daughter. Like, we're never really told why. She seems nice. She seems fine. She seems articulate and intelligent, and she's like got stuff to do. But do we get any real sense of what? It's like, oh, I love my first more. Like,
something
yeah, but...
films keep trying to tell us, Sam, which is that like parents have favourites, and that's something that rich people, because they don't have other problems, you know, like being poor, that they're then really worried about. Oh God, but Daddy didn't love me as much as my sister. Look at Friends. Rachel in Friends, a great example of like every plot is my daddy doesn't love me as much as my sister's, and it's like, well, I never had that. That's never been a thing for me.
No,
so I have real problems, you know, because we have real problems because we're real people who exist in the real world.
We've got shit to do. But when again, the film's not interested in even having that conversation. We don't get any real like sense of those two characters, the dad and the unloved daughter, coming together at the end. We don't.
The dad's
really
not a character in this movie.
No, the girl who's kidnapped, the favorite daughter, isn't really a character, and we don't get to really see any kind of like dynamic. How fun would it have been to have the unloved daughter and the loved daughter come together, and they can have like, they can argue about stuff while Harry Crumb's on the back of an aeroplane with his wig of a different outfit flying off. Like, give us the opportunity for that. Like, and the film's,
I think,
like,
we're asking a lot though. And this is to go back to it. It's a 90-minute movie, 94 minutes or something.
No, I don't think that's. I don't think.
No,
that's
no. What I'm saying is, if unless you remove one of the other things that's going on in this movie, I think you're asking a lot to have the SNL style like sketches where John Candy gets dressed in various outfits, which vary in racism, but they don't vary in ineffectiveness.
I will tell you what to remove from this movie, David, and that is all of these goddamn fucking characters. Where does this come from? We get.
I like the first one. Hear me out here. I'm not a total like cretin. I like the first one because it exists to illustrate how stupid this guy is. Because like
the first
he could
one
just
where
put
he's...
on. He, they don't know who he is.
Where
who's
he's...
Harry Crumb? It's like they don't know who he is at this clinic. He's not even from this town. He doesn't live here. He could just go in and be like, "Hi, I'm the mud inspector. I need to look at your mud." Or go in and say, "I'm investigating the disappearance of this woman. Can I come in and speak to the staff?" And they'd be like, "Yes, of course, sir. The police have called to tell us that you were coming." And but he puts on this like ridiculous like disguise. It's just like a blue velour jumpsuit and this Hungarian accent. And it's all there to portray how stupid he is because he thinks, and then they're just assaulting this beard, woman who's getting a mud bath,
his
and
his beard gets...
falls into this woman's crotch. It's his chest hair. He's got this chest hair, like V-shaped chest hair that he's got, and it falls out of his shirt. Again, do you need any of this? Why is any of this necessary? And that's
fine.
It's fine once, and then the second joke at the end, again, to call back, like, this guy is so bad at his job that he is like...
I'll tell you what, though.
It's a trope, isn't it? It's like, oh, well, I'll put on a fake moustache and some glasses, and then I'll be in disguise. Like, well, no, they don't know who you are. You don't need to be in disguise. You just look like a guy, and that's fine.
I'm laughing, though. I'm laughing. Like, that scene especially really did make me laugh. And I think it's like, it's aware this movie just somehow barely scrapes by and manages to make.
It's John Candy's magnetism. He's walking through the hair salon. He's like, too poofy, too straight, too... Whatever he says. And it's just like... It's his delivery and everyone else, obviously, like, and the direction, I quite like the direction in these scenes where he's in disguise. Because everyone's like, everyone around him is like, what the fuck is going on? Everyone knows that this guy is not on the level, except Harry Crumb. And that's kind of the core of why this movie's funny.
Yeah.
You know?
One thing I would like to explore, and again, I know we are digging into this far too much than it deserves, but hey, we got a fucking podcast. What else are we supposed to do? Like, I would have liked to have just explored a bit more about why Harry Crumb has been, because they send him to like Tulsa or something. Like that's what he's been sent off to because he's a loser, and like, I'd like to know more about that. He comes from a long line of investigators and union breakers. So, what did he do in the past? And how did he get kicked out? Like, was he supposed to inherit this agency?
Subtext, which isn't really mentioned, is like,
it's not mentioned. And I think that's the movie, isn't it?
There should be, you're absolutely right, there should be a scene where Elliot Drayson says to somebody else, he's like, oh, his family owns 40% of the company, we can't fire him. Like, you know, some sort of scene, and then, because the reason that Elliot Drayson brings Harry Crumb to investigate it is because he doesn't want him
to solve it. Yeah.
But he's been put out to pasture in this, like,
in Tulsa,
in a trailer, because again the subtext must be, and we should I wonder if it was a cut scene of Elliot Drayson just saying like, I know he's a moron, but that's why we sent him to Tulsa, because we can't fire him because his family still own, like, you know, yeah. Oh, this family still own 15% of the business,
and we already have characters, we already have this character who and it came out in the same year, in fact, Uncle Buck, a character who is misunderstood, and they don't really want him around, and they're like, oh no, don't come and look after our kids, it's fine. But the problem with that movie is that actually Uncle Buck's just a really cool guy who's just like really nice and actually really responsible and fun and engaging
Uncle
and cares
Buck
about everyone.
Is a movie that has heart. And
previous episode.
I really, really enjoy this movie. I really do.
So,
but it doesn't have any heart, and there really isn't any sort of message. But it's not. But,
hold on, because that's not quite what I'm going at. What I'm going at is that I want to see basically Uncle Buck, I want him to be useless. I want him to be lovable, but I want him to be useless, because that's the kind of the issue in Uncle Buck, is that he's not really, there's nothing wrong with him. Why wouldn't they want him around? Like, never mind, here comes Uncle Buck, oh God. Like, he's great. Whereas in this movie, I want him to be as charming and as lovable. I also want him to fuck up all the time. And Harry Crumb doesn't really make that many mistakes. He figures it out eventually. And like...
No, but he literally doesn't, Sam.
No,
he patently, he does not figure it out. That's the whole fucking pivot of the movie. Yes, they find the kidnapped girl, but he absolutely doesn't figure it out. Even when he finds Elliot Drayson, like, duct taped to that chair in the weird, like, full of dangling chains storage cupboard at the airport, right? He doesn't figure out that he's behind it.
He's rattled it, yeah.
Like, he saves the day, but...
That's what
the whole
I mean.
Throughout the whole movie, like, he doesn't figure it out. And Nicky doesn't figure it out. And this is the big thing where if you were going to punch this up, you'd maybe have it be more like...
But then he's not lovable enough. He doesn't have that soul. He doesn't have that lovability that I think you kind of want from... Because he's too zany. He's too many outfits. Get rid of his outfits. Cut these outfits out this goddamn scene, especially the racist ones. Is there two racist ones? He's dressed up as an Indian guy.
There's the racist one where he dresses up like an Indian guy.
The Hungarian one is actually borderline.
It's the accent as much as the brown face, to be honest. I would say
it's like a poo, isn't it?
And the words that he's saying, and it's a very racist portrayal. Like, it's not racially, it's full on racist.
Yeah, in a way, that go back to the Naked Gun. The Naked Gun manages to get away, and I think we were all surprised when we watched this, it manages to get away with not really going there. Like, there isn't particularly kind of racial jokes. There isn't... It's a bit misogynistic, but it's kind of more...
It held up surprisingly well for a movie starring O.J. Simpson, to be
honest. Yes, exactly. It's a bit more, you know, sexual rather than necessarily, like, anti-women. It's like, it's just overall we're going there. But generally, that film manages, I think, to pass the 2024 test in a way that this movie just doesn't. I think straight away, that one scene is enough to tank it to the bottom of the VHS ocean, you know.
Absolutely, I don't necessarily disagree. But like we said,
this stupid fucking movie, I loved it. Oh my God,
it's so fun. And I was watching it, and I'm sat there, like, just grinning ear to ear. And like,
so tell us about your VHS odyssey, then.
So I started watching this on VHS.
No, set us up. Hold on. How did you watch this? Have you got a VHS player? If so, do you have a TV with a fucking scart plug? Give us the details, Dave.
So when my grandparents died, they had a VHS player in their garage, which is now in my living room. And I have watched...
Taking up space.
Two or maybe even three VHS tapes on it. I think two. So I got it. I was really excited to... Because, like, I thought... And I was right. It was really fun. I was like a child. I was like, oh my God, I'd play a VHS. And then... But when you've actually gone through the rigmarole of, like, putting your VHS in, it spends 10 minutes rewinding it. Because obviously it wasn't rewound when you... watched it the last time.
Be kind, rewind.
Press play.
So did you have to connect it? How did you connect it to your telly, though? Is there, like, have you got
so
a SCART?
I had to get a... Because TVs don't have SCART inputs anymore. I had to get a SCART to HDMI, like, conversion box.
SCART to HDMI. It's like what's the equivalent? What's a good analogy where we take ancient technology and we transplant it. It's like converting a fucking rock to an thermonuclear warhead. Like, that's the level.
I remember the Sega Mega Drive worked on an aerial jack.
An aerial port, yeah.
And they stopped putting them in those original aerial ports in TVs some years ago. So you've got to buy. I had a SCART adapter for it. which is now I would need like a second adapter in addition to the SCART adapter. I would need a SCART adapter and an aerial adapter.
Daisy chaining adapters.
Whole house is going to burn down because I've got 15 fucking adapters to bring it up to the modern.
To digital, to analog, then back to digital, then back to analog.
And then we also had, when we were kids, we had a black and white TV, which again I think is in a box somewhere. And that didn't have a SCART port or component cables. So we did connect a GameCube or something to it, and that involved like a weird, like go backwards in time. It was very strange. It's very fun in a kind of like for 10 minutes sort of way.
So you push the VHS in, and it very receptively. I love how VHS tapes just kind of you push it in, and then it gets to a certain point, and it just takes it. And it's like, oh yeah, I'll have that.
Well, initially I took out a recorded VHS out of the VHS player, which had been in it. It said on the label on the side, it had something crossed out, and then it said Junior. And on the label on the front, it said Mary Poppins. We'll never know what was on this videotape because I hadn't watched it. I think I'd put it in with the intention to find out, because it will have been recorded off TV. This is a home recording.
Even.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, adverts from the mid-90s, fantastic. But when I ejected that and pulled it out, the ribbon didn't eject. So I'm a bit afraid, to be honest, that this Who's Harry Crumb VHS will not survive the journey.
Just
out
take
of
it
the
apart.
VHS
just
player.
Take the whole thing apart and just extract it. I love, there's loads of like technology connections videos on YouTube of how VHS work. Like, it's magic. It is actual magic that they managed to make a mass media format that you could just buy and it would work generally most of the time. Like, it's ridiculous, the complexity.
Because I'm watching a 30-year-old VHS tape, at least 30 years old, on a VHS player which is at least 25 years old. I would really love to have a side-by-side comparison of that on that in 1992 or whenever it was bought, right, versus it now, because they degrade over time, the film, the tape in
quite
the tape.
Badly. Yeah.
Degrades over time. It was really dark because I watched the trailers and I enjoyed that. And I thought, oh, well, this is not too, it's a bit grainy. And obviously, you get the little artifacts in the tape. And I was watching, and I watched maybe the first 10 minutes. And I was just struggling to see what was going on because it was so dark. And part of that's obviously, again, a dusty VHS player that's, you know, several decades old. And then the tape itself, you know, that it just degrades because it's very physical.
Maybe cleaned up a bit if you went in there with some isopropyl alcohol or something and just spray, you know, clean.
Yeah, because you can clean the tapes as well. You get like a tape cleaning device.
Or spoilers, just what you did, which is just go on Amazon Prime and watch it in crystal clear HD on your 4K screen.
I know, but like just occasionally, I've got a couple of other DVDs. I've got DVDs. DVDs is way more superior technology.
Crazy.
I've got a couple of other VHSs. I've got a 7 of 9 box set.
Oh my God, I love it.
It's got like 6 or 7 episodes of Star Trek Voyager.
That's what we used to get.
But not a specific season. They're just 7 of 9 episodes.
Just random 7 of 9 episodes that make no
context.
It's
like a 3 cassette box. I'm sure I've sent you a picture of it. I've also got a 3 cassette box of, and I might throw this out, of the 1980s or 1970s Shogun series.
Oh. Which is
well, the new one's it's
particularly
just
relevant
remade.
Because the new one, and we're going to watch that soon, I think. Yeah, so
again, just occasionally I get this like itch to just kind of like, because native hardware like this is really cool generally. Like,
oh, it's fascinating.
You know how much fun we have connecting an Xbox 360 to a TV, not playing games on it. My God, no, that's horrible.
No.
But like,
well, it reminds me of emulation because I love playing old games on it, and it's so easy on my computer now. Just I could turn on my plug an Xbox controller wirelessly, it all just works. Like, it's great, but to have the actual physical thing there, you know, it's fantastic. I mean, it's useless and it's pointless, and why are we doing it? But you know, speaking of things that are useless and pointless, and why are we doing it? Let's do this. Yes, it's the semi-relevant movie quiz, a quiz where we try to stump each other with stupid questions that are kind of about this movie. Who's Harry Crumb? We've got some questions each, and whoever wins gets a shitty VHS version of this movie. So I think you win already, Dave.
If you can remove it from my VHS player.
No, the answer is no.
How do we want to do this? That's last VHS thing. There's a warning at the very start of the VHS that says it shows you a picture of what the VHS tape should look like, and it was weird. It's got like a red flap and like a quite prominent logo on the label, and it says if your VHS does not look like this, call this number because it's like fraudulent.
Fraudulent. You have to
because
call
it would have been like a knockoff.
You have to call it. On air. Next week, let's do it. You
I'd have to reconnect my VHS.
Find out what the number is.
But
right, so
I watched three trailers that were on this VHS tape. Right?
I'm excited.
I've only seen... in fact, I haven't seen any of these three movies. I'd only heard of one of these movies. Okay. So I'll be amazed. I will be
I'm confident then.
If you get any of these... So this movie came out. So Who's Harry Crumb came out in 1989. So the movies are all around that era. I think two from 88 and one from 89. So the first movie, Sam. I'm going to read you just some of the. So it's the. It's a 1988 French adventure family film directed by Jean-Jacques Annaud and released by TriStar Pictures. Nothing? I'll keep giving you information.
Yeah, go on. 1988, French.
It's adapted from a novel by an American author, James Oliver Curwood. It's set in British Columbia, Canada. The plot involves some trophy hunters. I'm trying to give you advice here. It had a budget of 120 million francs.
Oh, my God. Pre-Euro.
$20 million budget. It made 100 million worldwide. It's quite well reviewed, generally.
I have no fucking clue. Tell me.
I was trying to give you like clues without giving it away because... here we go. There was a recent hit TV show set in a... sandwich restaurant on Disney Plus, like very recent, with the same name.
The bear.
Basically gave it to you, but this is a movie, Sam. This is a Bart the Bear movie called The Bear.
Oh my God, I'm aghast that I got that only based on basically what you said, but even still.
So it's a
right,
The
I'm
Bear is a 1988 film adapted from The Grizzly King. The film, set in British Columbia, the film tells the story of an orphan grizzly bear cub who befriends a large adult male Kodiak bear as two trophy hunters pursue them through the wild. This is
Bart
a movie which was advertised on the VHS for this. And it stars Bart the Bear, famous, very famous Bart the Bear. The preeminent bear actor.
of our time. Who was in 12 Monkeys last week's movie? He was in 12 Monkeys. Bart the Bear. Wow.
Too young.
Fantastic.
But
right,
this is a movie about two bears, so presumably they're not voiced, so presumably it's all like these grizzly hunters and then like these bears.
God, I bet this is like, can I just let's move on
make... but for good reasons, they don't make fucking movies starring animals anymore. Partly because I bet these animals were mistreated.
Mostly because they were mistreated. We can't do that anymore. That's why. Can I just say, Bart the Bear has some TV credits as well, obviously, including at the 70th Academy Awards, where he's given the the title of presenter. So I'll just leave that there. We don't need to go any further than
when
that.
I said preeminent Bear actors, I wasn't joking. Like Bart the Bear was big.
Top tier. George Clooney and him. Right, next one.
Bart the Bear. When it came to Bear acting, like, you look no further than Bart the Bear.
I said we're moving on. Give us the next movie, Dave. We can't talk about Bear actors all day. Go.
It's a 1988 film directed by Matt Clark, starring Martin Sheen and Barnard Hughes. Barnard Hughes reprising his Tony Award-winning Broadway performance, also starring William Hickey. It's a movie that takes place in Ireland. Martin Sheen is doing a heinous Irish accent. And it's adapted from a play. I was watching the trailer for this, like, my mouth was open as it was playing because I was like, what the fuck is this?
I don't have any clue. And I don't think you could... I think you could tell me the name of the movie, I'd be like, huh? So... Just tell me the name of the movie. I have no idea.
So can I tell you the plot first, and then I'll tell you the name.
Yeah.
So you'll almost certainly get the next one. Martin Sheen is a playwright in New York who must travel to Ireland to oversee the burial of his father. During his time there, he visits his childhood home and is visited by the spirit of his deceased father. Charlie then travels down memory lane. It's not haunting. Charlie then travels down memory lane, reliving both happy and sad memories with his dead father. The movie is called Dar. D-A. Dar.
That sounds absolutely fucking miserable. It sounds so miserable. So miserable. We're never watching that.
No, God, no. I'd never ever heard of it. I saw Martin Sheen doing a really bad Irish accent in this movie. I'd never heard of it. But they say the name Dar because it's obviously playing on the fact that it's a well-known play. So it's playing on the fact that the character's well-known.
The Wikipedia page is about 20 words long.
It's not long.
This is the level. I mean, it's a small, it's a small movie, isn't it? But anyway. Right, go on.
Yeah. The next one is a 1989... It is a 1989 children's martial arts sequel.
Karate Kid 2?
No, it's Karate Kid 3! I couldn't give you any more than that. Like, at the minute I said kids' martial arts movie, I'm like, well, there's only fucking, four of them.
I'm so disappointed in myself.
The second one came out in
86. Karate Kid?
Second one was 86, and this one's 89.
I should have thought about that. I didn't think until after I said it because I thought, I didn't think when is Karate Kid 2 because that would be too long, because it was a massive hit.
In fairness to you, Sam, obviously I've never seen Karate Kid 3. I watched the trailer and thought it was Karate Kid 2. Like, I literally thought it was Karate Kid 2.
But I should have.
Because the trailer makes it clear that Mr. Miyagi and there's another competition. And I was like, why are they advertising a 1986 film on this 1989
film? I should have done better. I should have thought, when did Karate Kid 1 come out? That's early to mid-80s. They wouldn't have waited that long because it was a massive success. So 2 would have been right after. And then 3 would have been like, if we get anything left of this, fucking pull them out again. Do it again.
Tell you, just underline the point, right? That this film is for nobody. Those are the three movies which are advertised on the VHS for this.
It's
a movie about a French movie about bears.
Dad movie.
Starring bears. Four bears, presumably.
Hold on. It's a dad movie. It's a literal dad movie, and then it's a kids movie at the end. And that is exactly the confusion that we were just talking about earlier, isn't it? That is perfect. Can we do this every week?
More, to be honest.
Can we do this every week? This is thoroughly enjoyable. I have absolutely loved doing this. Just, you need to watch a crappy VHS 90s movie every week.
I have got a large box of VHS tapes, so be careful what you wish for, Sam.
Destroy every single one of those so I could play this trailer game.
Who cares? It's a dead technology. I was watching it, and then my mum got quite offended. She was in the room, and I was like, oh, we're going to watch this VHS tape. She was like, why, though? Well, I said, well, we're doing the podcast. But isn't it on like Amazon or something? Oh, well, it is, but I want to watch the trailers. You want to watch the trailers? Yeah, I want to watch the trailers. Okay, and then when I was like, wow, this is dog shit, she was like, oh, I will have you know that we, you know, when I was a kid, and I was like, hey, I'm not attacking your childhood. It's fine. It's okay. You didn't have the technology. It's fine.
Oh, that is brilliant. Right, well.
She started coming out with stories about how her parents had to borrow a TV and a VHS player from somebody when someone gave them a recorded VHS of someone's wedding.
Yeah, you had to rent them. You could rent TVs. Remember that?
I think it's because I'm from Yorkshire, you see. So it's everyone's poorer than you in the past.
So it's a big loud.
You got one.
For me, I got one. No, I didn't.
You got the
no,
bear.
I did. I got the
I
bear.
Gave it to you. I gave
because
it
you
to
gave
you.
It.
You got
That's
it.
Fine. I'll take it. I'll take the point. Right. I've got some questions for you, and let's see how torturous this is. So, in this movie, John Candy. Is not playing someone called John. But in two other movies, he does play people called John. Which of these two movies does he play characters called John? Do you get it? Do you get it? You with me?
I got it. Yep, I got it.
Is it Deadly Compassion, Going
Never
Berserk, or Home Alone? I've realised this is
Home Alone. It's something really like rural. Polka, polka,
sure?
Polka.
Polka, yeah, polka, sure. Polka.
Polka, polka, polka.
Yeah, he was fine.
What are the other names of their hit singles? Polka, polka, polka.
I don't know, but I love the line where I love the line improvised where he's like, yeah, we left him at a funeral parlor once. Yeah, he was fine, you know. He started talking after a couple of weeks. Like, that's just fucking genius. So,
ideally,
an
you
answer.
Get John Candy in on your film set and just not write any lines for him, and he just turns
and
up.
And pay him literally
the best
for
bit in your whole movie.
In your whole movie, and pay him $400 to do so. So, Deadly Compassion, Going Berserk, or Home Alone? Which of the two of those movies was he called John? Now, I wouldn't be so confident about that.
Can you tell me? I'm going to have a think. Could you maybe tell me, like, without telling me the character name, what's the brief plot of those first two movies? Because I've never heard of them.
You've never heard of Deadly Compassion. No,
is that a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie?
Hold on. I think I may have been auto-corrected in that. Hold on a second. I'm going to go Going Berserk, which definitely is correct. Going Berserk is an American-Canadian comedy film. No, I've just given you the answer. Oh, God damn it. Just giving you the fucking answer.
This one went exactly as I hoped it would.
It's the first word. Right, well, you could... Right, let's Google.
Just fucking... Don't do the auto-prompt Ron Burgundy thing, Sam. Just read it in your head first.
It's not that. It's that it's changed it. It's that it's changed it. If I go deadly... Deadly Companion. God damn it. So there you go. There's your fucking answers. Deadly Companion, which is... This is the full plot on Wikipedia. Michael Taylor is tormented by a sheer lack of memory concerning the night his wife was found brutally murdered. Michael's girlfriend Paula helps him attempt to make sense of it all.
This is a John Candy movie.
He's on the cover. He's also listed second bottom on Wikipedia. So I think this is a retroactive, like, let's get John Candy's face on this. He's top billing. He's top billing, but he's on the cover art. But he's not included in the starring on Wikipedia or IMDb.
Interesting. So, Deadly Onslaught, or no, sorry.
Deadly Companion.
So I've got to decide whether Deadly Companion or Home Alone he's called John in, because you've already told me that he's called John in the other one.
Yes, Going Berserk, which is a clumsy chauffeur hypnotized by a cult to kill the father of his fiancée, a congressman who's suing the cult for fraud, encounters several weird characters during the days leading up to his wedding. I don't know if that sentence makes
terrible.
Any sense. 1980.
Is it a wedding or is it a congressman's like inauguration? Like what's going on? Anyway, add that to the stay tuned list. I think I'll maybe give.
Oh my god!
Throw that a watch. I don't think his name's John in Home Alone. I think it's something funnier than that. So I'm going to say that his name is John in Deadly Companion.
Deadly Companion is correct. Yes, well done. What a fucking stupid question that was. I regret it immediately. here we go. Here's another one that we'll regret.
What's his name in Home Alone?
Gus Polinski. Polka King.
Polka. The Polka King.
Polka King of the Midwest. Yeah. Question two.
Polka.
There aren't many people with the surname Candy, turns out, but your job, Dave, is to match these candies with their professions. So I'm going to give you a name and I'm going to give you three options. And you've just got to drill it down until you run out, basically. Right. So Brooke Candy is Brooke Candy, an American rapper born in 1989, a Union officer in the American Civil War, or an Australian tennis player who died in 2020?
That's good. That's really, really good.
also, all of these we will get to. We've got two more names after this.
Oh, I see. So there's a Civil War.
So basically, you've got to whittle it down. But if you get them wrong, I'm not going to give you the point, and we're going to move on. And the next one, you'll still have three. So you've got
How's it spelled? How's Brooke Candy spelled?
B-R-O-O-K-E, Candy with a Y, crucially.
I think Brooke Candy is an Australian tennis player.
Final answer?
Yes, final answer.
That's incorrect.
Fucker. You can't tell me what it is, though, until the end.
I can't tell you what it is, exactly. So we're going to go to the next one. Is Charles Candy, an American rapper born in 1989, a Union officer in the American Civil War, or an Australian tennis player who died in 2020? Charles Candy.
I am going to remain with door one. I'm going to say an Australian tennis player who died in 2020.
I love this game. This is. I think we've accidentally found a quiz format that we can just
really,
mine
really worked,
forever.
Yeah.
Incorrect as well. So that
I was really hoping that would narrow it down if that was the right one.
This is so fun.
Okay.
Last one. Is Don Candy, an American rapper born in 1989, a Union officer in the American Civil War, or an Australian tennis player?
I don't think Don is a Union Civil War. I think that was Brooke. I think Brooke Candy was the Civil War person. Which leaves me with the situation where that means that Charles Candy must be the real name of an American Midwest rapper. Which means that Don Candy must be, logically, because I've picked it for the other two, must be the Australian tennis player who died in 2020.
Correct, indeed.
Well, that wasn't my first thought, by the way. It wasn't until I finished that sentence that I realised that it must be the tennis player.
You deleted two. So I'll give you the chance to earn some bonus points and tell me again. Brooke Candy is the American rapper or the Union officer, and the same with Charles Candy. So Charles Candy, Brooke Candy, make your choice now.
All the names in the American Civil War were stupid.
Yes. Yes, they were.
Rappers, quite frequently.
It's quite stupid as well.
This is tough. This is maybe the best question you've ever had in this quiz. I think Brooke Candy is the Civil War general. And I'm sure I'm wrong, but I'm going with that.
Oh,
fuck,
it's a massive
wrong.
Charles Candy. Do we want to learn anything about these fucking people or not? Really, I don't really care.
What's Brooke Candy's like rapper name?
Brooke Candy is an American rapper, sings and tattoos. She's raised in the suburbs of Los Angeles. She rose to prominence starring in Grimes' music video Genesis in 2012.
So she just goes by Brooke Candy.
Yep. Here we go. Candy's status as underground scene rose as she began to release her own music, ensuing the songs Das Me, Everybody Does, and I Wanna Fuck Right Now.
That's on the nose, that last one, isn't it?
Charles Candy, career soldier, blah, blah, blah. Played a role in the defense of Culpsill during the Battle of Gettysburg and died age 78 in 1910. And then, fuck it, we may as well. Don Candy was a right-handed Our right hand.
Fantastic. That's really good to know.
Australian tennis player who was mainly successful in doubles. And I don't know, he won one thing and was runner-up many other times. Up until 1959.
You really dug quite deep on that. There's no way I could have known any of those.
We are so doing this every week now. I have accidentally stumbled upon the greatest game we've ever...
Okay, well, that can be your first question every week, and I'm not allowed to... Got you.
You have to
pick an actor. It doesn't necessarily have to be the lead actor, but...
We'll just pick an actor that has the same surname as someone in the movie, and then we'll just talk nonsense for 10 minutes.
Absolutely. In fact, let's sack the movie off. Let's just do this as the new format.
Right, do you want to have one more question just for fun?
Yes.
And then we can very, very, very quickly get out of here after this. So, John Canley, as we know, sadly died in 1994. His penultimate movie, with one more release after his death, was called Wagons East. And it was also released the same year that he died in 1994. But what Rotten Tomatoes score does Wagons East have? Is it 1%?
Will you allow me a bit of leeway here? It's because you're asking me to guess a number between 1 and 100.
No, I'm not. I'm going to give you options. Is it 1%, 5%, or 0%?
I've not seen this movie. From what did he die during production, or is that a different movie?
Yeah, he did. This is where he died, and then they released it. They had to do lots of, like, obviously the usual thing of editing,
shooting
and
around,
blah, blah, blah.
Cutting around the fact that the lead actor had died.
That he's not in this. Richard Lewis. Directed by Peter Markle, and 1984. And then a film called Canadian Bacon.
I've heard of Canadian Bacon as well.
Which is a comedy film written and produced by Michael Moore, which satirizes Canada-US relations and has John Candy in it. So, Wagons East, 1%, 5%, or 0%? Give us your best shot.
I think it's 0. I think it's 0%.
Confident?
Nope.
Well, you should be indeed. That's correct.
From everything I've heard about this movie, says like it was a real mistake to release it when they'd only shot half of the scenes they wanted to shoot with John Candy, and I don't think it would have been good even then.
It is one of only 43 films that have 20 or more reviews on Rotten Tomatoes that have 0%. We are talking a very exclusive list, including Jaws, The Revenge, Police Academy 4, Highlander 2, The Quickening. We're talking about the sequel to Saturday Night Fever, Staying Alive. We're talking about...
Not Sunday Night Fever. The sequel to Saturday Night Fever is not called Sunday Night Fever.
No, it's called Staying Alive, as in the Beatles song. We're talking about loads of films you haven't even heard. Gotti, John Travolta, that weird movie that came out fairly recently.
This is really a list of movies no one's heard of, isn't it?
The Ridiculous Six, Adam Sandler movie. We've heard of that one. Basically, a load of shite, and this is one of them. So there we go. That's a rip-roaring tour through questions that are semi-relevant to John Candy and this movie. And I think, Dave, you've won the week, so congratulations to you. We've done it. We've got through this movie. We've managed to somehow generate more than an hour's content about this very, very forgettable John Candy movie. You're muted, and I think... you've muted yourself out of absolute disgust. There we go. Like, God damn it. God damn it. How have we done it again? We've managed to just generate such incredible content.
Why won't anyone stop us? Why do they keep letting us do this?
What do you mean there isn't any police on the internet who can regulate this type of content? I think that's outrageous.
I think there are police on the internet, Sam. Maybe we don't have that as a rule for life.
Are you saying we need to do something more shocking? Tune in next week.